WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Elvis Presley, Jerry Lee Lewis, Roy Orbison, and Carl Perkins all began their recording careers at Sun Studios, a Memphis label run by Sam Phillips. The Sun sound helped define rock and roll. My guest Colin Escott has spent a lot of his life keeping those Sun records available. He catalogued Sun's master tapes and has organized many reissues, mostly for the European market. He and his old friend Martin Hawkins are the authors of the book Good Rockin' Tonight, Sun Records and the Birth of Rock and Roll. I asked Escott if he could pick one record that best represented the Sun sound.
Well, I think Mystery Train, because it was a kind of uncommercial commerciality both to the song, in that the title's never mentioned in the song, which is sort of typically Sun in its way, but also the earlier version, the first version by Junior Parker, really captured the kind of bluesy feel that Phillips was drawn to, unusually so for a white Southerner. And the rock and roll version by Elvis really shows the magic that Phillips managed to draw out of Elvis Presley, or that he was the catalyst to enable Elvis to draw out of himself, whichever way you wanted to cast it.
Well, let's contrast those two versions of Mystery Train. Colin Escott, how would you describe the Sun sound? What is it that we're talking about?
I think what we're talking about is a production philosophy more than a sound. It's the assumption that feel in music is preeminent, and that the recording technology should never be an end in itself so much as a vehicle for capturing the kind of rawness and spontaneity that Sam Phillips gravitated towards, you know, that his natural ear led him towards. And in terms of sound, Sun didn't do much that hadn't come before. Phillips just had this echo that it was really poor man's echo, in that he couldn't afford an echo chamber. So what he did was to use two tape machines that he strung together and bounced the signal from one to the other, giving this kind of haunting slapback sound. It became known as slapback, which was basically the very slight microsecond delay between one machine and the other that just gave it this kind of raw, visceral quality that Phillips loved, much more intimate in a way, much more focused than the kind of cavernous chamber echo. But really, the rawness of sound enhanced by that strange echo is probably the closest you can come to defining the Sun sound.
And you can hear that echo on the Elvis version of Mystery Train.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Just a wash in it.
One of the most famous quotes attributed to Sam Phillips was, "If I could find a white boy who could sing like a black man, I could make $1 million." But sometimes that quote reads more like, "If I could find a white boy who could sing like a nigger, I could make $1 million." And a lot of people think that this is a sign of Phillips' racism. What's the story behind that quote, and is there any way of finding out which way he really said it and what he really meant by it?
Well, I mean, I think there's no evidence that Phillips was a racist, because if he were, what was he doing recording black music in Memphis in 1951? You know, that's not the hallmark of your run-of-the-mill racist. But I think what he realized was that as a rhythm and blues label, which was how Sun started out, that the demographic base that he was servicing was just too small. There were too many there was too much product in search of too few dollars, basically. And he said that by going out to the distributors and visiting the radio stations, he knew that white kids were listening to this rhythm and blues music, but he also knew that they weren't buying the records that much and they weren't going to see the artists because of the social situation in the South and in a broader context in the nation as a whole. And what his assistant said that he said over and over was that if he could find a white guy who had that feel for black music, that feel for the loose jointed swing and rhythm, that he could make himself $1 million. And he did.
And do you think that the contrast we just heard between Junior Parker and Elvis Presley illustrates how he did it?
Yeah, pretty much.
How did Sam Phillips find Elvis Presley, or how did Presley find Phillips?
Well, really, Sam Phillips didn't go out and check out the clubs and do other things that A&R men do these days. He just positioned himself in downtown Memphis, and the talent came to find him. It just came walking in off the streets because for a lot of years, he was the only game in town.
How would you describe Sun's place on the birth of rock and roll?
Well, that really depends upon what you define as rock and roll. The other day I was listening to a CD that RCA put out, which had this black gospel recording from 1928. It started off with a sermon, and then about halfway through it broke into song, and my God, I mean, that was rock and roll. It was incredible. It was 1928. So in the sense that rock and roll was the white appropriation of elements of black music and creating something new out of that hybrid, I think you can say that Presley and Sam Phillips created probably the most influential brand of rock and roll, the one that really developed into mainstream rock and roll.
If Sun Records combined a black and white sound to get a new sound of rock and roll, Sun Records also combined a rock and roll sound with country music.
That's right. I mean, for a while, in late 55, I guess, 54 and 55, all Sam Phillips blues artists had either left town or were thinking of going, and he was looking for a way to stay alive. And the most obvious option for him was to record country music, because country music was everywhere. You know, Memphis is renowned as the home of the blues, but there's been country music there as long, if not longer. And Sam was just starting to have some success with Elvis, and it was worth remembering that Elvis's success came out of the country market. I mean, when Elvis was bought by RCA, he was bought as a country musician. He wasn't bought as a pop musician. RCA certainly saw some potential for him in the pop market, but he was primarily a country musician. And Sam was also having success with Johnny Cash, Cash's first record that was doing quite well, and Carl Perkins also in the country market. So those singers, particularly Carl Perkins and Elvis Presley, brought a lot of their country music background into the mix that became rock and roll. You know, the term rockabilly really is it. You know, that's what it was. It was rhythm and blues, rock and roll music combined with hillbilly music.
Colin Escott is my guest. He's the co-author of the book Good Rockin' Tonight, Sun Records and the Birth of Rock and Roll. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about Sun Records with Colin Escott. What is Sam Phillips doing now?
Sam's nursing his investment portfolio. He accomplished, the record business is essentially a crapshoot. It always was, and it always will be. And Sam won big, and rather than reinvest his winnings in more chips, he got out, and he invested his winnings in oil properties, and he was one of the first investors in Holiday Inn. He bought himself radio stations, and he's always sort of juggling the wattage and doing the other things that radio station owners do.
Now let's talk about where you enter the picture here. How did you start listening to Sun Records? When did Sun start to mean something to you?
Well, you know, in England during the late 50s and early 60s, there really wasn't that much American rock and roll music available over in England. There was Buddy Holly, Elvis Presley, a few Jerry Lee Lewis records, one Carl Perkins record, and so on. And My friend Martin and I noticed that many of our favorite records, the Carl Perkins, Jerry Lewis, Charlie Rich, and so on, had been recorded by Sun. And they weren't released on the Sun label in England. They were released on London Records. But they had this little subscript that said, recorded by Sun Memphis. That was really the beginning of it, I guess.
When did you make your first pilgrimage to Memphis?
Oh, 69, I think, 1969.
And what happened when you got there?
Sam Phillips wouldn't talk to us, but a lot of other people would.
So you went there with the idea of doing research or just...
Yeah, basically, we'd received and spent the advance from a publisher to write a book about Sun Records, and we came to town with the idea of researching it. And we obviously tried to talk to Phillips first, and he wouldn't talk to us at that point. So we just sat there in the lobby of the hotel with the phone book and going through it and comparing that to a list of Sun Records and seeing who was still in town. Surprising number were.
Are there any Sun musicians who you've been trying to track down for years and you still can't locate them?
Yeah, Elvis. I hear he's around somewhere.
I saw him the other day.
You and several others.
You ended up cataloging Sun tapes, didn't you? Like working for the company?
Well, working for them as a consultant, I guess you say. I mean, everyone's a consultant now. I guess we were too. I mean, Sam Phillips' documentation skills weren't the greatest. Most record companies will log the tape box and say, you know, what day it was recorded and who the artist was and what the songs were and everything else. Sam's approach was a little bit different. He would finish the session and he'd put the tape away and he'd listen to it the next day and he'd put second cut real good or something on the back. Still no artist, no title, no nothing. Because, of course, he knew who it was. And that's how a lot of the tapes have come down through the years, with little notes like that inside. So we listened to all the tapes and set about cataloging them and just seeing what was there on behalf of the European record companies that own the rights to it, because they were anxious to get some of that product onto the market.
What made Sam Phillips talk to you this time around?
We put out a box set in England called the Sun Box, which was like an overview of what he did. And we sent him a copy, and he phoned us up and said we'd read his damn mind, was what he said to us. And from that point on, he cooperated.
How did you read his mind? I mean, what ideas of his were so in sync with yours?
He just said that we'd gone for stuff other than the obvious, and our idea of what was important from what he did meshed with his idea of what was important from what he did.
So just a record for us to listen to that isn't one of the obvious Sun records, but that you think is like a really important, wonderful record, and that, you know, also epitomizes the Sun sound, even though it's not very well known.
Okay, there's a record by Howlin' Wolf called Mr. Highwayman. It was done in 1951, before Sun Records started, and Phillips recorded it for Chess. But it really is a statement of his production values, and it shows everything that he would later bring to rock and roll music. It was all there in place in 1951.
Well, Colin, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Terry.
Colin Escott is the co-author of Good Rockin' Tonight.
Be careful what you're driving, man. Better be careful. Down standing the highwayman, standing parked on the road. Down standing the highwayman, parked on the road. You better watch out for the red light just before you go. Green lights to go, red lights to stop. Look at your boy, you better be on your watch. Down standing the highwayman. You better be careful about how you drive on the road. Stop. machine. Me and my baby can ride and everything is nice to me. I'll make a cool hundred and I ain't got time to stop for gas. I'll make a cool hundred and I ain't got time to stop for gas. I'm gonna drive this automobile just as long as the gas lasts.
This is Fresh Air.